So thank you so much, all those who are here today. I have a great presenter today with me, Courtney Frike. I'm going to introduce her in a second. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a syndicator, multifamily syndicator. I do multifamily. I've been doing multifamily for last about 4 years now. And during these 4 years, I have acquired approximately about 1,500 units in my management. Just my background is, I have a strong technology background. For last 25 years, I've worked in corporate America in all capacities, senior team member, manager, director. I have managed teams across the world. And, at some point in my life, in my career, I realized that, I was trading my time for money. So I started getting involved into real estate. Today, I have about 100 units in my name. I own them, and about 1,500 units. Here I say 1,200, but about 1,500 units under my management. I focus only on multifamily as well as on assisted living. I've been exploring that asset class for last couple of years. I'm in the process of buying some also, the bigger assisted living facilities. But that is my experience. I run a meetup here in New York. I do these webinars, just to share my knowledge and share the knowledge of those whom I know very well for general, sharing purposes only. There's never any charge on any of the contents that we produce. I have, a couple of websites. But guys, stick around till the end, towards the end. So having said that, I'm not going to take too much of your time. I'm going to stop presenting my bio to you. Basically, Courtney, thank you so much. We have Courtney Frike with us. And Courtney, I'm going to read your bio a little bit, kind of introduce you to the group. Courtney has been investing since 2015. And ever since, she has flipped and owned hundreds of properties in Greater New Orleans area. Since her start, she has flipped, held rentals, wholesaled, developed, bought and sold with owner financing, and handled complex title issues, both on single family and commercial properties side, before taking that leap to work full time for herself investing. Her background was in nonprofit work and then in commercial property management, where she created and executed the management plan for the turnaround of 100 plus unit marina to prepare the asset for sale. As a founder of North Shore Real Estate Investors Association and the co-host of WWL Home Improvement Radio Show, she cares about solving the real estate problems of her community through education for the public and as an industry leader. Courtney, thank you so much for taking time to talk today. You are very welcome.
Prashant, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for the invite, and I'm glad to be here. Part of what I want to share about tonight has a lot to do with not only things that I've been, studying for a while to kind of prepare, but as you heard, I got into the industry in 14, but I've only been investing since 15. So what does that tell you? It tells you that I've been investing in an up market, right? I have not been during a crash. I've not, held assets during a crash. And so that has been a big part of something that I've been trying to develop, is how can I be a common sense investor and protect myself and build up some hedges for what may or may not come. We don't know what tomorrow looks like, but obviously there's some writing on the wall.
So, sorry to jump in. Today's discussion point was how to hedge, how to hedge by investing in multiple asset classes. And I couldn't find anybody better than Courtney to talk about that. So yeah, that's what Courtney started talking about. How to hedge by investing in multiple asset classes. Please go ahead, Courtney.
Sure thing. So I'm an avid reader. a lot of times, if you look at how many books were written during 06, 07, and 08, it is a significant amount. I've got about 1,300 books in my library. If I went, probably 50 of them would be on everything from the collapse of, big banks, things like that. There's so many of them that were written during that time. And as I've thumbed through them, because I'm trying to understand, success leaves clues, right? So I'm trying to understand what are some things that I should be paying attention to. Another thing that I have done is I've gotten around, with all due respect, people with gray hair, right? People who've been in the industry for a while, because I'm notoriously conservative, right? So why am I doing all these things? Well, since I got into the industry, you hear all the stories. You hear the stories of the people who, they built something great and then they've lost it, right? They either lost it and they left the industry, or they lost it and they had to rebuild it. So, I was afraid, hey, what might be my undoing, right? No one ever intends on that happening, right? It's usually just made. And Jim Rohn, he's one of the people who's influenced my life a lot. He said success is nothing more than a few simple disciplines done every day. But he says on the other side, your undoing is not one catalytic event. It's actually just small errors in judgment made here and there, right? So again, this is something that I've been really doing my best to build my investment firm with wisdom, right? So I'll share this. There's three ways that I've been diversifying. I started in 15, started off flipping single family, started off wholesaling single family. And one of the things is obviously that's not wealth building, that's income building, which is fine. We all need those things. But as I start to make that transition to include holding assets, single family is easy to get into. And so obviously I got into some single family rentals, and I did so in a few different types of asset classes where, I bought out someone's portfolio that was a little bit, let's just call those C-, in a C- area. Lower income, on the border of getting gentrified. So, you have some things like that. But then over time, I started realizing that there's other things that I could be doing. And so again, as I'm gleaning wisdom from the people around me, as I'm asking questions, as I, I'm in masterminds and I'm saying, hey, you've been in the industry for 20 years, you've been in the industry for 15, you've been in the industry for 40 years. Can you tell me, X, Y, Z. So here are some of the things that I've done. And I've really, especially since COVID hit last year, we've really been fine-tuning this plan and putting it into action even further. Again, there's some writing on the walls. We don't know what it's going to look like. I'm not even going to pretend to tell you. And my background, I do have a bit. I am an industry leader, especially in my region. I have the privilege of running a Real Estate Investors Association. I train local brokerages. I'm on the radio every weekend. There's a lot that I've got my hands in as far as in the industry, but none of us, even if, someone has all the letters behind their names, none of us truly know what tomorrow is going to hold. The question is, what can you do to help you sleep at night so that you can look your investors in the face and say, I'm doing everything I can to be a good steward of these assets, right? So the first thing is that I have diversified where I'm not just staying in one asset class. So for example, even in our single families, but I also own mobile home parks. We're under contract with an RV park. I've got some smaller multifamilies. We're under contract for some larger multifamilies. And then we are also, I'll tell some more about some other things, but about the different asset types. But when it comes to it, across the board, I'm trying to not just stay in one asset class, meaning I'm not just staying in B+ assets where, the rent, I've got one, it's a $2,500 a month single family rental in an area where the average rent is $1,200, right? So it's a 6-bedroom house. So I'm not just chalking full my portfolio of just that, right? I've also got a 3-bedroom, 1-bath that is worth maybe $100,000 in an era where the average house is worth 225, right? So we diversify in that way. But we're also doing it with the commercial properties as well, because that is a part of making sure that you're diversifying the type of clients that you serve. Because obviously, honestly, at the end of the day, we get paid when we have clients who pay. And so that is something that I've done very strategically, because, for example, I'm not just sticking in that higher income, because obviously people's jobs can get, you know, slash whatever that may look like. And then what COVID taught me is you also got to be careful with being just in the service industry in a lower class. And so you've got to be diversified in that sense. So that's one way that I diversify, is a sense of the economically, I'm not just going after high paying tenants, low paying tenants, things like that.
So what you are really saying, Freaky, is not just the asset class, the type of the clientele or type of the asset types that you get into, you have some diversification there. I mean, I know you kind of said that you have gone into multiple asset classes like mobile home parks or RV. And earlier we were talking about hotel and you talked about single family homes. So you have wide spectrum of investments. And it is very prudent. I mean, you have the capacity to be able to handle all those. How do you kind of manage those, you know, yourself, you know?
Yes. So that's actually really important. So that's the second way that I diversify, is with different types of assets. So not just all single families or not just all multifamilies. And one last thing I want to say about the asset classes is last year I secured my first government contract. We're currently working on our second one. So when it comes down to it, we're dabbling in Section 8 for the first time for an asset we just acquired. So I don't want all of my portfolio to be that. Again, that's the whole premise there. But I am wanting to bring, that is a level of diversification for me. So for the asset types, absolutely right. Because when it comes down to it, owning real estate, I'm a true believer that the two main ways that people build wealth is historically has been through owning real estate and owning businesses. But owning real estate is not enough for you to have a metric of wealth, right? Because how many times are we buying from people who own a piece of real estate, but they did not become wealthy? It's how you manage it that truly will help you towards that metric of obtaining wealth. So that is something that there's two ways that I build it out. Number one, obviously we build internally some systems, but secondly, it's through partnerships where, so I was mentioning earlier, I have under contract right now, a 45 unit motel, and I've never bought a motel before, but it was a great deal that came to me and prime location. Initially I wanted to convert it to apartments, and actually the zoning was going to be pretty easy. It's actually built like apartment complexes versus a motel. And so I truly explored that, but I got talking with someone in the short-term rental space and in the motel space. And when we started running the numbers, I realized how much money I could leave on the table, because literally this property is catty corner to the auditorium for the city. It's right next door to the city hall. It's two streets from the parade route down in Louisiana. We have parades, Mardi Gras, right? 3 miles from a hotel, a major hospital. And so it is right in the hub of a downtown area in a city. So major, just fantastic location. So with that being said, I'd never bought a motel before. I didn't even know all of the metrics, things like words like RevPAR and all of these things to actually fully do the due diligence. And so I very strategically, within masterminds I was in and other things along those lines, I brought on a partner who had the background in it, and I vetted them as an operator. And I said, look, I'm going to bring you in because this is a good deal. And I know it is, but I need you to come in. And so I vetted them as an operator for the business plan and the management style. And so, and I picked someone very strategically for that, because my background is when I managed that marina, one of the biggest things I saw with that marina was it was owned by an apartment complex corporation based out of California. They had thousands of units all across the US, and they had one pet project of the founding, the father who founded the company was, they built these apartments and then they put a marina behind it. Well, when they did the, they executed the sale of the apartments, they could not get the buyer to buy the marina. So they had this one random marina. Every single time when I managed that, every single meeting I went to, it was such a distraction for their management because they had no SOPs for the marina. Every meeting I went to was like, well, now Courtney, go translate that to the boats in the marina. And I was like, okay, how do you evict a boat? Like, you know, none of it was lined out. So because I saw that management distraction, that is something I'm very cautious of, but at the same time, so it's through partnerships and it's through building out different SOPs for different asset classes, where at the end of the day, management generally stays the same. It's just a few things that have to vary. Like, what does a turnover look like for a trailer versus an apartment versus a single family?
So what I'm really hearing from you, Courtney, is, I mean, I know you said that you are super conservative, you know, hedge your bets against, you know, you are very careful in hedging your bets against when you go into these projects. I mean, yes, nobody has a crystal ball. I mean, I can have five acronyms after my name. They are useless because I cannot see in the world. I mean, there's no future that we can see. So, In your mind, your journey in last 5 years, tell us, chronologically, I know you kind of said that, but how much diversification do you have in different asset classes? I mean, what is the portfolio size percentage wise that you have, and what are your thoughts?
So let's see. 2015 to 2019, maybe even 2018, predominantly was single family and then just single mobile homes and land.
Okay.
Predominantly, we would have some duplexes, anything under four units.
Yeah.
That was predominantly where I was at. Mm-hmm. But I felt vulnerable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I started looking at some things. So then that's where I started building out the plan. Right now, I would say asset class wise, parks, so mobile home parks and RV parks are about 80%, mostly just because we've gotten some bigger lakes of the bigger deals with those.
Yeah.
And then we've got multifamily would be about 10%. And then it would be the remaining five would be single family, mm-hmm. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Without putting pen to paper. But that's with some of, I do lean towards mobile home parks. One of the upsides with our mobile home parks is, for example, one of them, it was not only just the mobile homes with the actual park, but we actually bought an entire city block. So we got single family homes and then the laundromat, some additional land, some different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like them because there's some diversification within that actual asset class as well.
Yeah.
So those are, that's actually can be common within the parks that we have found.
The point I was trying to understand was you like most of real estate investors, everybody starts in single family homes, but at some point those who are ambitious enough and those who want to get up from their asses and do some real work, what I have seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, and no offense to any, I'm not trying to offend anybody here. Most of the folks I've seen that they have gone out of residential and have gone bigger to get to be able to scale their business. Folks have gone into different asset classes where one transaction can bring them 100 mobile homes at once, right? Or one transaction can give you 500 units of apartment complex, So yes, it may take you time, and you know, you started with single family, but in overall portfolio, your single family is anywhere from 5 to 10, maybe 15%. But other than that, the world is big. I mean, you can jump into any asset class. I mean, you have 100 things. You know, the moment you get into commercial, the way I look at it, besides my home, whatever I see is real estate, right? Besides homes, I mean, homes are also real estate. Everything is real estate. You know, offices are real estate. You know, retail is real estate. Warehouses are real estate. Apartment complexes are real estate. You name it. Everything is real estate. So why just to stick in one small section, which is single family? If you want to scale into bigger asset classes where you can do bigger and better things. I mean, that's just my thought. So I kind of wanted to hear from, you know, I know a lot of people make a lot of money in single family homes. But it takes a lot of time also. That's just my thought.
Well, no, and I mean, we've got 580 units under contract right now that we're in the due diligence phase, and it's only 2 commercial deals, right? And so how long would it take you to get 580 doors with single families, right?
I cannot do it. I cannot do it in 10 years, you know.
But there's something to be said, though, because you've got so many exit strategies with one single family home.
Yeah.
So don't get me wrong, I enjoy that. Now, trailer parks, I enjoy them as well because, for example, in our one park, we can have 3 types of tenants. We can have just a lot rent where they bring their trailer and they rent the lot from us. Secondly, you could have it where we have the trailers owned by us and we just rent the trailer out. And the third one is where we can do it as a lease option, where we're actually selling them the trailer. And so one of the parks we recently got was such a value add situation that we're actually going to turn a portion of the trailers into the lease options, where eventually they'll become just tenants paying lot rent. But we're going to create a note with that lease option where we're selling them that trailer that's a fixer upper, and it allows us to eventually take that where we've got multiple ways that we can make money out of this park, not to include, you know, again, the laundromat, other things like that.
There are a lot of strategies, you know, in single families and in multi-families or in bigger commercial, you can make money in different ways. So one thing, a deeper thing which you said, that an action is important. You do something, right? In my mind, non-action is also an action, which defines your destiny, right? If I'm sitting here and listening to everybody, you know, all fine folks, and do nothing, right? I mean, I'm not going to get to the next level. For me, so my action is that I'm sitting here, so that the result of that is that there will not be a change in my net worth over the next couple of years. But if I get up and do something, which I'm seeing here in last 6 years only, starting from 2015 till 2021, I mean, now Courtney is talking about 580 unit buildings in contract, hotels in contract. Guys, come on. I'm sure she has gifted gifts, you know, God gifted talent. But I mean, I think even everybody has some talent and they can use that and do something good for themselves and share the knowledge with the world. Would you agree, Courtney, what I just said?
Look, I've run a real estate investors association, which if you're not involved in the one in your area, I highly recommend you go find the local investor meetup, because if anything, it's a monthly meeting that is a date with yourself to remind you of your goals, right? And to get you stirred up by talking with other people. But since I started it in 2018, I've had a few thousand people come through the doors, and it's been a wonderful case study for me, right? And I've seen so many people who get bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about real estate, and however they learned about it, through webinars like this, through a book, through a podcast, through someone in their family telling them about it, whatever it may be, But so many people, I see so many people come in who want to get started, who never do. And there's a really high dropout rate. And one of the biggest things I've learned is that part of it is that it's not a get rich quick, right? So understand that there's some long game playing here, which it truly serves you well to build, you know, to start with that and in mind. But secondly, it's that understanding that, again, I like books, right? A library is super powerful, but the intention of a library is that those books get picked up, they get read and enjoyed. But if you came across a dusty old library that no one is touching, that is so much untapped power, right? So a huge part to that is all this stuff that you're learning, the intention of you learning is that you're going to put it to use. And so until you put it to use, that is untapped potential and untapped power. So that is one of the biggest things is when I see people in my RIA who, yes, they're here and they're learning this, that, and the other, but there's got to be a balance between learning and doing. And when you find, when I find that, man, there's people who've been in my RIA who, I know that they're going to do great things just because they're willing to go out and try. A parked car is going nowhere, right? So you've got to take action. You've got to turn the key on. You've got to hit the gas. Because look, you can course correct along the way. Like, it's okay. Just fail forward and fail fast. And fail with people around you who can catch you, right? That's something I'd highly recommend, which is why when I level up, I partner up many times. That's what I do. Because I'm like, hey, look, let me get around someone who can at least kind of be some bumper rails for me when I'm trying to figure out how to get a strike in this deal. So I definitely agree with you, Prashant.
Awesome. That's like, you know, guys, these are golden nuggets, okay? But what I was saying was that's a golden nugget. You have to get up and take some action and take the action with those who know a little bit more than you, you know? I mean, if you are taking today an action, just be part of something bigger, you know, a RIA or something where your partners know a little bit more than you and you learn from them with experience, right? Yeah, Sonia, you were saying something?
Yeah, I would be interested in the mobile home park space. Like, how did you learn that asset class and how to underwrite a deal?
Sure. So I learned a few different things. First of all, so I'm down based in Louisiana, down in the Gulf states, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. At least I find that there's more mobile home parks around here. So it's something that I've been aware of. And obviously I listened to podcasts and I heard people doing it, right? So I got introduced to listening about others investing in it. I think I underwrote my first deal 2018 for a mobile home park, but it was like a 12 unit that was 2 to 3 hours away from me. And I ended up deciding that was too little units too far away. So I started building in some criteria. Here's the thing though, is I went to, I had a friend who put on like a basically like a mastermind. It was stupid cheap. It was in Texas where I used to live. So I drove 7 hours to it and he literally brought us to one of his parks, showed us his like his appraisal from when he bought it and then his appraisal from after he did the renovations. And he showed us how he forced appreciation. He took the cap rate from like a 14 to a 9. You know, he was showing those things. And on the way home was when I went to that first park, two or three hours away from home, because I just wanted to take action on what I learned. Right now, again, eventually backed up. One of the things I learned was obviously ways to look for value add, obviously something where the business is broken and potentially the buildings need work, right? So the broken business part, one of the main things I was worried about was the septic, like the utilities, because my job at the marina, it got me very acquainted with the EPA and the DEQ. So I was, I knew that could be a headache. And that was something that, again, I got around someone who had about four or five parks. And he said, look, if you're worried about that, just go find parks with city utilities. So that's what I started doing. I think I offered on 3 or 4 different parks before I eventually took down my first. And one of the things was when I had that first one, I second guessed myself. I was like, how do I know I'm getting at a good deal? I almost walked away 2 or 3 times. But instead, what I did is I went to some people who had parks. I said, look, here's the bare metrics of the deal. Would you do this deal? And they all said yes. And so then I said, you know what? I'm super analytical, conservative. I'm like, I'm getting in my own way. So we just took the deal down, right? And that is something that I have learned, that ultimately my beginning deals, you get in your head, you're like, because we're all looking to do a home run when really we just need some base hits in real estate. But I have to be like, okay, I just don't want to fail miserably, right? So that's where the sounding board comes into play. So that's one of those big things. Have some people that you surround yourself with in those asset classes that you can go to, that you can at least understand what makes the metric of a deal. And, you know, like, what are the things that you need to look at to run the numbers on it so that you can then say, hey, here's the basis of this deal, and use them as a sounding board. Is this, you know, is there anything about this that is concerning to you? And then from there, I think trial by fire to learn on those first ones.
So
does that answer your question? Oh, you're muted, Sonia. Yeah.
Sorry. Yes. I mean, that's a class that I'm interested in investing in. And I've actually looked at a few parks, but just, you know, try to reach out to a few people that, I guess I didn't really know anybody in that space. I mean, I am a hard money lender with a few people that flip mobile homes for a living. Instead of flipping houses, they flip mobile homes. But I didn't really know anybody in the space that invested in mobile home parks. Now, I know that, like, you hear Chris Rod, he has a program, and I'm sure there's some other people that have a program to learn about it. You know, I've thought about storage units, but I also have that same mindset. Like, we own single families, small multifamilies, and we're limited partners in multifamily deals. And I'm trying to now be more on the active side of multifamily. And for me, I'm looking tomorrow at a 36 unit. I might be able to take it down myself depending on the work, but I might need one or two other partners. I don't want 50 to 100 partners in a deal. So we'll see how that goes tomorrow. But I love the idea of, like, diversification. And I think some people have this mindset that, oh, I'm like you said earlier, like, investing in, you know, B class properties or even A class properties. And sometimes when you mention mobile home parks to somebody, like, it's, I almost feel like, oh, well, that's beneath me, you know what I mean, type of attitude. And I'm just looking, you know, everybody needs a place to live, right? Not everybody can afford nice places to live, but you want a nice, safe, clean place to live, right? And I think affordability is going to play a big part with whatever is going to happen in this market, right?
Yes. No, so Sonia, those are some great points. So a few things with that is I definitely agree. I think there's a stigma with mobile homes, not just mobile home parks, but mobile homes. And I have made, let me say this. When I was wholesaling properties, there were houses that I would never buy myself to put in my portfolio. Like, they were in certain neighborhoods, or I didn't want to handle this foundation issue, or this, that, or the other. But I would continuously make significant amounts of money, understanding one simple truth: I am not the market, right? And so whenever I can understand that I'm not the market, but if I look at the market subjectively and saying, what are the needs in the market, which a major need right now is affordable housing, then I say, okay, how can I bring a satisfactory product that will earn me revenue again and again and again, that I can, and then how can I control the expenses so that I can make a profit, right? And that is what you can do with mobile home parks, right? There are mobile home parks that are in all different asset classes, where you've got mobile home parks that, I mean, they're D minus that, but there's mobile home parks that you can push to B to B plus, A plus, right? So understand that that comes to, location and management style. Again, so we just bought a 30 unit. And one of the last ways I'll share that I've diversified is through location. I live in the Gulf States. We have hurricanes, right? So one of the things I'm strategically doing is buying in different places and actually building out my portfolio in different states so that I can be protected. If a storm comes, all of my assets are not in my backyard, right? So that is something that I'm doing. But so I just bought a mobile home park in Mississippi. It is a CC minus area, but the neighborhood is on a trend, on a path of progress. And so if we're like the worst property in the area, which is what you want to buy. So we're actively going through there, and it's going to take us some while to stabilize it. But we have the opportunity to significantly improve the area because we're a full city block, right? We're a significant part of the neighborhood. So understand that there's things that you can do. And at the end of the day, you basically set the parameter for, like, for example, one of the very first things we did was we created community guidelines for that park so that the community guidelines are setting the parameters for this is what it looks like and what we're expecting of you as a neighbor, you know, within this community. So there's a lot that you can do there for sure.
So one thing I had promised that towards the end, and probably, we might be going towards the end, that I will share some things, you know, the free stuff for my listeners. I have a 7-day passive email course, passive investment email course that I have created. Feel free, those who want to, just these are the 7 videos that people get in the email. So feel free to go to my website, subscribe to that if you want to. So you'll get 7 emails on 7 days. We'll talk about how passive investing can help you build your wealth over a period of time. So I just wanted to kind of give it out to everybody, those who are interested in. I'm a multifamily syndicator. I connect with a lot of people every week through different channels. Folks, are there any questions for Courtney? I mean, we have heard a lot. I mean, Courtney, I know people may be thinking, Eto, do you have any questions? We are not able to hear you for some reason.
You can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. So, thank you for putting this together. And Courtney, great, great, great wealth of information. And I really appreciate you coming on. This is my first time. So, thank you. It's a blessing. So, one question that I have for you is, I have been looking into, multifamily for the last 3 years, but I've, had this analysis paralysis, syndrome to it, analysis paralysis syndrome, like for a couple of, months into years now. So I finally decided to take a leap into one multifamily up in the Albany area. And I did not take time enough to do like a very detailed analysis of the property, but my fear was that if I had done that, I would have gotten into the same kind of emotional and paralysis that I experienced a couple of years. So I'm actually moving forward with the acquisition. I'm actually waiting for the bank right now to clear for closing, and then the goal is that I want to be able to jump and then figure out how I'm going to land instead of figuring how I'm going to land before I jump. And I think that is leading me to learn quite a bit of the process and everything. But my main question is, in some of the markets that I've sort of researched, right, there are a lot of opportunities in very C, like a lot of C minus areas, sea areas, and that is where I was focusing on. And those are like 2 hours or 3 hours away from where I am. But the opportunities over there are great. Would you recommend for a start getting into properties in the sea area where, you know, maybe the crime rate and other vices are very significantly high, since I'm going to be like a remote or distant, you know, absentee landlord or work with some sort of management company to you know, oversee that for me? What are your thoughts on that?
I know that's a great question. Generally, when people go into C minus, you know, the lower income classes, a lot of times I find that it's either for one of two reasons. It's at a price point that they can afford, or it's just the only opportunities they can find. But what I have learned is that those specific asset classes demand a strong operator and a strong management plan, because you either have, you know, the community guideline part can be, you know, more difficult, or, you know, depending on a lot of factors, you know, with crime, other things like that, you can struggle building a strong management plan with those asset classes. Or you can, you know, yes, you can get the place rented out, but will it be as profitable as, you know, because of the management struggles? So with that being said, do I think that you could get into that? I think you could, you know, like, I think you could learn. The question here is that I would put a demand on having some strong property management plans for it. And I know you mentioned you're not going to be local. So the question is, I really think it's going to be dependent on the person you're going to outsource that to, because those class properties can be very difficult to keep things under control. And at the end of the day, again, it's not owning properties that is a metric to wealth, it's how you manage it. So the question here is, do you know, real estate investing is a team sport. Do you have a very, like, how do you feel about the team that you would then outsource it to? Now, at the same time, have I invested in these? Yes. So that's where one of the things I would say, look, I would start vetting property managers in the area. Is it a value add property where you have vacancies, or you're going to have to do repairs and then have to re-rent, to re-lease up the place? Is that what's going on currently?
Right. So the one that I'm actually getting, waiting for closing now, it's in a decent neighborhood, and it's been fixed up, even though there are some work, but the plan is to fix, you know, rent it out and fix it as I go, as and when it becomes necessary, or when I have the, you know, funds to do that. But there are other areas that I'm targeting. That is where the, you know, the C areas are.
Yes. So that would just be my recommendation for those C class areas, is just having a very strong management plan. For example, one of the things I do with management plan is we've got the plan that has to go with due diligence, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's the purchase, and then it's literally day one of asset ownership, 30 days, 90 days, 180 days, you know, like basically we have a timeline that we build out. And what I do is like, okay, what is going to be the goal in the first 30 days, right? Mm-hmm. If we inherit tenants, that's usually going to be, you know, new management conversations, letters, you know, things like that. Building out your plan for that one. Because here's the thing is, you want to have a goal. Success can't just be a blank check. You've got to have a goal at the end. What would make that property successful? And my experience has been with those classes, it is 1000% on the management style. Mm-hmm. So what is that plan going to be? And then can you execute it and put it into play?
Awesome.
That's
very helpful.
Great question.
That's a great question and great answer, Courtney. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm struggling. I mean, even though I'm a multifamily syndicator and I've been doing it for so many years, I had few single families which were C-class assets in C-class area, and I did not have the good management plan for it, and have been struggling on those. assets, you know, which I can probably close my eyes and cut the check and, you know, do whatever needs to be done. But if it is a C-class asset, C-class area, you have to have a plan. I mean, strong management is the key. Otherwise, you'll be scratching your head, you know, more than what it is worth, you know.
Yeah.
Well, folks, very good. Thank you so much. It's, anybody has any final questions for Courtney, feel free to ask. But, you know, we asked, you know, we were trying to understand, you know, how one person, I mean, how somebody can hedge their risk by diversifying their portfolio in different asset classes. And Courtney has explained it so well that, you know, you have to connect with like-minded people. Of course, she owns the RIA, which she has built it from scratch, and connections with different industry, you know, different skill sets. You know, for motel, you need a motel kind of operator, right? For a mobile home parks, you need somebody who's local there. I mean, you cannot just go to 10 different places in a day. So you have to have the right management put in place for different kind of assets. And you can still manage them. And, you know, you have to be, it's your baby. You have to take care of it, right? I mean, you need to know what's going on in the management also all the time. I think we kind of touched on that part also, that irrespective of where the property is, you need to know what's going on in the property, right? Because you are the one who is ultimately responsible for the real numbers. So no, it was basically Atto is asking if there are any open masterminds that you can recommend. You know, anybody has anything? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of getting around you know, continued education. But when it comes to a mastermind, there's just a lot of different definitions, right? A mastermind could be this, right? Yeah. A mastermind could be me and three people going to have coffee, yeah. Or it could be something that I pay yearly to be a part of, right? Sonia mentioned earlier, Chris Rude. I know him personally. I know him and his wife, Patty. They're here in Louisiana. It really is going to depend on this. One of the biggest things I say, I've been a part and I've stroked some pretty big checks to be a part of some masterminds, and they can be really powerful. But the thing I'm going to say is this, is you want to find one that is going to help you with the goals that you have. Because for example, if it's just real estate investing in general, okay, but there's actually multifamily masterminds. There are masterminds, for example, I joined one that's specifically about like holistic success, where I'm not just successful in business and financing, but relationships, physically, mentally, you know, because I find that whenever I'm firing on all pistons, I feel better in life, right? So I specifically joined a mastermind and got a coach with that. So it's really going to depend on what specific goals you have. And then I would go, and if you're looking into a mastermind, I would get around the person who leads it, listen to them. They're generally going to be all over social media, and listen to them for a while and find some people and see if the people in their masterminds are better because of it specifically, not just better because they're in, you know, they're bettering themselves, but better because of that one specifically.
Got it.
Great, great thoughts. Very good thoughts.
I'm just curious, what's the most you've spent on a mastermind? Because I just got invited to a women's mastermind that is like international, and I have to decide by Saturday.
What was it, $17,000 or $25,000 or something like that? I'll say this, I have spent $100 on, I mentioned that one mastermind that was like, I went to someone's in Texas, their mobile home park. The guy charged, I kid you not, $100. And so I had my hotel I learned so much from it, right? And I've been to, believe it or not, I think it was like 22,000 or whatever it was not the most impactful thing I've been to. So money is not always an indicator. You know, I've spent $2,500 for a weekend, but the reality here is even when I've spent that amount, I'm like, you know what, if I can just take away one thing, guys, we can make that in one deal. That's the beauty of real estate, mm-hmm. right? I can just take away one little thing. So that's definitely one of those things. I've been very cautious around, because I can be a self-development fiend. You know, I love to read. I love to get around things like this. So I've been cautious around just always chasing those. But I've been looking for to get around people who will specifically challenging me in the areas where I'm weakest, and masterminds versus courses have tend to be, you know, but it took me a while. It took me a few years before I could write a certain, like write checks like that just for education. So it comes with time, but it's definitely, here's the thing is you can build, one of the things I recommend my RIA, the people who attend my local real estate investor meeting, I said, look, y'all, mine happen to be free and they're open to the public. But I tell people, I said, look, I know you guys come and, you know, we'll have over 100 people in the room. I'm like, look, find someone that you're connecting with here in this room and say, hey, can we either have a once a week phone call or every 2 weeks go get coffee? Because what that does is it keeps you, it puts a date on your calendar where you're realigning yourself with your goal by talking it out with someone who might say, hey, have you made an offer on a property this week? Or, you know, hey, you said you were going to go do this. Have you done that yet? Right? Just have someone who you can talk real estate with, because you may not have other people in your life you can talk real estate with, or you can talk, you know, high performance stuff, right? Like just self-development and bettering yourself and things like that. So masterminds can look like a ton of different things.
It's so good to hear you, Courtney. I mean, talking about all this, you know, good stuff, you know, really. I mean, I'm humbled, you know. I mean, I'm sure everybody else is. These are real things, you know, real nuggets, guys. I mean, take it or leave it. I mean, you can take it as a grain of salt and you can just stick it and just take it, you know, to your heart and get up and do something in your lives, you know. And as she says, you know, you can do a lot. I mean, I'm a workaholic kind of guy. I mean, I love to get up and do something. You know, I do 100 things. I start my day at 6 o'clock in the morning every day. It goes till about 10, 11 o'clock every day, you know. But that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is take an action, get up and do something. Help will find. You will correct your course. Courtney said that you don't need to know the whole road before you start. You will correct your course when, you know, as you start driving on the path, you know. So very good, guys. We are just about at the end of the time. Cedric, thank you so much, sir, for showing your face. Appreciate you joining. Sonia, Angel, Chrissy, Marcus, Irina, folks, once again, everybody can say thank you to Courtney, you know, just, you know, and Courtney, again, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. And we will, hopefully we'll talk again, you know, on this webinar, or if I come to Louisiana sometime, you know, I will stop by in your mastermind or in your RIA meeting.